The way we're going to operate today is we're going to have the senior folks from the county speak about, as John said, some of the visions that they have for 29 and Rio. And so we'll start with a general presentation, and then we'll move into three particular topics. The first particular topic, and each of these topics will have time for discussion on that topic and Q&A on that topic. The three topics will be first economic development of that area, including attracting new businesses and helping current businesses grow. And that'll be led by the senior county executive, Lee Catlin. Then we'll move to a discussion of transportation in that area, concerning cars, bikes, pedestrians, and transit, led by the principal planner for transportation, Kevin McDermott. And then finally, we'll end with a particular discussion on the amenities, land use, urban forms, and features of the area, led by Rachel Falkenstein, senior planner for the county. But as we start, I do want to thank our speakers. We have most of the county representatives right here today, and we're very much appreciative of that. But I especially want to thank Diantha McKeel for her leadership of the chair of the Albemarle County Supervisors, and prior to that, 16 years as on the school board, several of those as chair. Mr. Brad Sheffield, supervisor of the Rio District since 2013, and for his leadership of Jaunt, a service that many of our members depend upon. Lee Catlin, as I said, the assistant county executive, who's retiring after close to 25 years. And I very much appreciate the excellent service that she has given to our beloved county. The senior planner, Rachel Falkenstein, and then finally, Kevin McDermott, the principal planner for transportation. And as I said, we'll talk about three separate topics after the introduction, and then at the end, we'll open it up for Q&A on any topic, since we have both Ms. McKeel and Mr. Sheffield here today. So very much appreciate. Let me open it up for an introduction from the chair, Diantha McKeel, and Mr. Sheffield. So please.
Good afternoon. We're not going to take a lot of time because you really want to see the presentation and have a discussion, I know. But thank you very much for inviting us. It is just a real privilege to speak to all of you this afternoon. And with that, Brad, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Oh, no. This is the favorite part of the job, is actually interacting with residents. So it's part of the job I'm going to miss quite a bit. And 200 more days. So.
He's counting down. Yeah, he's counting, exactly. He gives us hours and minutes, and we do want to say that we have Lee at least until November. So we're not going to let her retire until November. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rachel. Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for having us. I'm really looking forward to some lively discussion on this topic. But what we're going to start off with is just a brief introduction of the Small Area Plan Project to let you know what the project is all about and what we've done to date on this project. So I want to start off with actually a really short video that we put together introducing the Small Area Plan Project and talking a little bit about why we're doing it and what the purpose of the project is. Do we have sound?
It begs the question, what will this area look like in another 60 years? The new Rio Road grade-separated intersection and its connection to the John Warner Parkway and the new Northside Library on West Rio Road are only the beginning of redevelopment in this area. New private sector projects in the pipeline will add more retail and housing. Now is the perfect time for the community to reflect on what it wants this area to look like, not just in 60 years, but in 5, 10, or 20 years. In order to articulate a vision for this area and a better plan for this redevelopment, the county has recently begun the work of developing a small area plan. Small area plans are a planning tool used to guide land use, zoning, transportation improvements, open space, and other capital improvements at a higher level of detail than is possible in other planning documents, like master plans or the comprehensive plan. Because of that, a small area plan can identify and address specific local conditions and opportunities for revitalization and mixed-use development. The small area plan will allow land uses and the design of road improvements to be coordinated, and for the business owners and residents of the planning area to participate in the planning process. The small area plan will expand upon the recommendations from the comprehensive plan and the Places 29 master plan, which calls for the intersection of Rye Road and US 29 to redevelop into a vibrant mixed-use area. The small area plan will include a more detailed, desired land use plan and urban design recommendations, and it will provide a more concrete vision about what this area could look like. Once adopted, the small area plan will become part of the county's comprehensive plan and the Places 29 master plan. The small area plan will be completed in two phases. Phase 1 includes an analysis of the study area, a market assessment, and will result in a preferred land use alternative for the study area. The county received a grant from the Office of Intermodal Transportation and Investment for the completion of Phase 1, which has allowed the county to work with a consultant, Renaissance Planning, to do this work. Phase 1 will wrap up in early 2017. Phase 2 will include a final land use plan, an urban design plan, a transportation plan, and an implementation action plan. Once complete, the final small area plan document will be adopted as part of the Places 29 master plan and the comprehensive plan. Completion for Phase 2 is anticipated at the end of 2017, and adoption of the new small area plan should occur shortly thereafter. In order to make the RIO 29 small area plan a successful and viable planning tool, it is essential to have participation from you, our community, throughout the planning process. We want to hear from you about your desires and vision for this area. There are many ways to get involved. Please join us at a public event or send us a comment through email, Facebook, or Twitter. For more information, visit www.albemarle.org/RIO29SAP. Be a part of creating the vision to transform this important area of the county.
All right, so that was just a little bit of background on the planning process. I do want to reiterate what our process is and where we are right now in the planning process. So as the video discussed, we have three phases. The first phase was visioning, and we've already completed that phase, and I'm going to talk in a minute about some of the outcomes of that first phase. Right now we're in the design phase. We're just getting started in this phase, and our plan for the design is to come up with a more detailed design of what the area should look like. What are the forms? What should the buildings look like? How big should they be? What should their relationship be to the streets in the area? What should the transportation for the area be? Where can we provide more streets and connectivity? So that's what we're working on right now. And then the last phase is implementation. So how can we realize this vision? What updates the county need to do to their policies? Do we need to update our zoning ordinance to realize this vision in the area? And that will come early next year. We're thinking May 2018 is our goal for that. And then afterwards, there'll be an adoption phase where if we have to adopt new policies, we will do that shortly thereafter. So I want to talk about some of the takeaways we heard from Phase 1. During Phase 1, we did it was mostly an analysis and visioning exercise for us. We did a lot of community engagement. We did some site analysis. As you saw in the video, we went out and walked around the area with some of our key partners. And some of the takeaways I thought were really interesting. People wanted transformation of the area. People were really interested in something different rather than a continuation of the current trends. As you saw in the video and as you know from being familiar with the area, it's very auto-centric. There's a lot of commercial and retail in the area, and it's not very walkable. And people really wanted the area to be walkable. So we settled on this concept of the 15-minute walkable community. And what that means is people want to be able to park their car and get out and safely and conveniently walk from place to place. And the average person is willing to walk for about 15 minutes or a half a mile, give or take, before they will get in their car to drive to run errands or to get to a place. So that's what we settled on for the vision in phase one, that we would organize the area into walkable centers that correspond to about a half mile radius that people would be able to walk around in. And as you saw in the video, phase one, we looked at a really large area. It's about 2 miles from end to end. We looked at the area from the Rivanna River in the north down to Branchlands Boulevard. And we came up with three potential walkable nodes within that area. And what we heard from people in phase one is that we really should start our focus and start our design on the area around Rio 29, because they felt that was the most important center for the area. So that's where we are today. We're in phase two, and we're trying to answer some questions about the design of the area. So phase two will include a detailed design of the Rio 29 node, and I'll show you what that looks like in a second. It will also include a transportation strategy. It'll talk about what land uses are appropriate, and then what amenities and infrastructure the area should incorporate. So this is our Rio 29 walkable center. If I can try and orient you here on the map. This here right in the center is the new grade separated interchange. This is Route 29, and this is Rio Road. Our circles correspond to our large circle is our half mile radius around that center point, and this inner circle is a quarter mile radius. And the area is shaded over here and on this side as well, are single family residential, and we're leaving those out of our design plan because we don't have a desire to redesign or redevelop these areas. We really want to focus on the commercial core of the area. So to point out a few landmarks on this map, we've got Fashion Square Mall, Albemarle Square, Rio Hill Shopping Center, and 29th Place, which was formerly Shoppers World, all within this walkable 15-minute center around the Rio 29 intersection. So that's the area we're focusing on for phase one, and we want to have some discussion on what your thoughts are for a future vision for this area. And as Richard was describing, we're going to talk about economic development opportunities, transportation, and land use. And we'll get into that in a second. But first, I just want to acknowledge another parallel planning project that's going on right now. You may have heard of it. They're doing a small area plan for the hydraulic intersection as well. It's a completely separate planning effort that's going on at the same time. But I do want to let you know we are collaborating with the project team on this. It's actually has areas of city and county within the borders of this planning area. So there's a team that consists of city staff, county staff, and VDOT is leading this planning effort because they're looking at how they might fix the hydraulic intersection similar to as they did with Rio and 29, but they want to do a little more planning around it before they get into construction. So I just want to let you know about that. Today we're going to focus our discussion on the Rio 29 intersection, but I just wanted to acknowledge that this is happening. Now before we get into the discussion, does anyone have questions, just general questions about the planning process or what the small area plan is?
And if you do, wait for a microphone so that because this session is podcast, so we want to be able to hear your voice. And you've got a microphone on each side.
Okay, so I don't think I'm seeing any questions, so now I'm going to turn it over to Lee Catlin to talk a little bit about economic development.
Thank you, Rachel. We are really happy to be here with you and appreciate a full room for this discussion. It's great. I appreciate your comments on my retirement. I have to say that my colleagues are now a little nervous when I get in front of the microphone because they think this lady's got nothing to lose. But I promise I'm going to behave myself and keep focused on the discussion at hand. I hope it may have been a little hard to hear a little bit of the video, but I hope it initiated some excitement and some challenging to thinking among you all, because I have to say that staff is really excited and inspired about this opportunity to take an area of the county that we all have familiarity with and to, I think the key word here being transform it into a vibrant, vital place that becomes a destination and a real kind of defining place for Albemarle County. We have not had that to the point. As we have evolved from a rural, suburban to a more urban place, we haven't kind of had many of those places that are something that attracts and really communicates a sense of urban vibrancy and vitality. So this is an opportunity for us, is something that's very exciting. The county and the Board of Supervisors are very committed to it, but it doesn't work if it doesn't reflect the things that are important to you all in the community. We have had, as Rachel alluded to, a lot of community meetings. I think our goal is to have everybody in the county involved in at least one direct community meeting. I think we're getting pretty close to that. And as I look in this crowd, several of you are two or three timers, so we appreciate you staying engaged in this dialogue. We've talked to a lot of different groups, business groups, neighbor groups. Speaking to you all as the senior statesman is really important perspective to us, because I think if you look at any of the success stories that are out there about urban places that are really making it, the senior citizen crowd, the crowd that I count myself among, is a really vibrant part of how communities are transforming. We're elbowing the millennials out of the way and saying, we want to be part of this. So your thoughts on this, on the economic part of it, the housing options, the transportation and connectivity part, is very key to making sure that RIO 29 succeeds. So this is intended to be a discussion. I'm going to just frame a few questions for you, but really we're here to take notes and to listen and to put your feedback into the big blender of feedback that we're hearing from a bunch of different perspectives about how we can make this urban place work for Albemarle County. So let me go ahead and ask you just basically, economic activity, economic development across a couple of ranges is important to us. We need business activity that attracts people and keeps businesses vibrant. We need jobs. We need lots of different things happening there. So if I were to ask you all to think about RIO 29, not necessarily as we've always seen it, but to get yourself in that transformational place, if it is to become a vibrant urban center, what kind of businesses, what kind of business activity do you think is going to attract the kind of energy that we're looking for in the RIO 29 area? What types of businesses do you think will attract economic vibrancy? No, that's good. That's very important to note. So I'm hearing somebody say easily accessible businesses, or that the accessibility feature is going to be important. Thank you.
Let me ask about the accessibility. We've spent many millions of dollars to improve that intersection, to widen 29, to create alternative routes around that intersection. An incredible amount of money. So it seems strange to me that we would then want to increase the congestion in that area by adding more businesses, putting more in that area. I don't understand that from a vision standpoint. I think we've got a great walkable urban area. It's called Charlottesville. And even though it's a different governmental unit, this is one community, and I don't know why we would ignore Charlottesville and try to create a second Charlottesville in this, very high traffic area. So if you could help me understand
that. Sure, that is a great question and really important for us to talk about. I'm going to let the more transportation focused questions go until Kevin goes on. But what I do want to talk about is this idea of, are we trying to compete with downtown Charlottesville? And I would say that we are looking for something that is going to complement downtown Charlottesville. Anybody who's looked at the rents or the vacancy rates of the downtown mall or downtown Charlottesville knows that that is pretty tapped out. And as lovely and wonderful as it is, it cannot accommodate all the businesses and the types of enterprises that want to be in a vibrant urban setting. So this is not about competing with or in any way taking away from downtown Charlottesville. It's about recognizing that Albemarle County is an urbanizing county with its own needs to have places that attract businesses and economic activity. So I would say that if we're able to be successful in Rio 29, we will be enhancing downtown mall, because this is very, and Kevin will talk about this, the bike and pedestrian connections to the downtown mall are very strong. And we often hear from our city colleagues, we can't accommodate all the interest that we have from people who want to be in a cool, neat setting with some vibe. So it's really inherent on us in Albemarle County to take control of our destiny and to provide something that will satisfy that for the city. So if there's any part of this that sounds like this is competition, please know right off the bat, this is about cooperation and collaboration and lifting our whole region and not competing.
Go ahead. Brad and I were just saying that we maybe should jump in here for just a minute, because you make a really great point. Charlottesville is actually working with us. We've been talking with City Council. They are very concerned that they are losing businesses to Richmond because they're out of space. And while you're hearing about new businesses that are going to be opening up, the Ice Park, I understand that. We are talking right now between the two boards about signing a memorandum of understanding around economic development so that working together we can lift both communities. We want to stop losing businesses to other areas and keep them within Charlottesville and Albemarle. I lost my train of thought. Come on up, Brad, and then I'll come back to what I was going to say. You all surely do that as well sometimes.
And I'll speak to the point of yes, we have an economic center called Charlottesville. I don't think the goal is to replicate that or duplicate it or recreate it anywhere else. The reality is, I'll get you to think about Berkmar Drive. Berkmar Drive extended is going to go all the way up to Hollymead, possibly punch through to the Airport Road and beyond. How that corridor develops, not redevelops. There is empty forest land that's going to be developed. How that develop is key to our economic strategies, because one, if we know what type of businesses we're trying to attract, we know what type of environment to create for them to grow. So just putting a strip mall on Berkmar is not going to make this community successful. It's not going to attract that anchor business that we're looking for. But if we know that we're looking for, let's say, a light tech industry, and we know what type of facilities they need, and then the ancillary aspects of that they need, what type of businesses do they need to support their business, that allows us to start better planning that corridor alone, let alone the Rio area, let alone Albemarle County. So if you don't start to kind of strategically line up your dominoes, they're not going to fall in the order that you're looking for. So no, it's not to recreate Charlottesville. It's actually for us to be better prepared for those target industries that we can support, that we do want to support, but we have to make sure that we are sending the right message, that we're ready to support them.
And I did remember what I was going to talk about. So for Albemarle County, we have to realize that we're no longer a bedroom community around Charlottesville. That's the way we were for many years. But we've urbanized our urban ring now. And for the supervisors to just continue to raise your property taxes to support the services that our urbanized urban ring needs, we have to generate more revenues. And in order to generate more revenues, we need business. Our ratio of residential and business revenues is very skewed. And so we're looking to get to increase the amount of businesses we have, but we don't want just more restaurants. We need really good jobs for folks, and we need businesses, the right kind of businesses. We're looking at partnering. We're having great discussions now, right now, with the University of Virginia around entrepreneurs and being able to support some of the work that their faculty wants to do that Charlottesville no longer has room for. So this is a partnership among all of us, UVA, the university, and the Charlottesville and Albemarle, around economic development. Does that help at all answering your question? Okay.
Well, I was. All right. Is this on?
Yes.
I was hoping.
Go ahead.
I was hoping, and don't consider this to be in competition with Charlottesville. I would like to see Albemarle County not being just a bedroom community. We have enough, a lot of beds. We need to have many little village sort of settings, walkable and connected by arteries of shuttles and bus systems to get people from one little community of, just like you like to have a lot of restaurants to choose tastes from, you might want to be in this little shopping center over here and have it easily accessible for us as we get older and might not be driving ourselves to be able to get from the little shop we like over here to the little shop we like over there. And to have, I'm looking forward to seeing what this new assisted living facility I've read once about is going to be, that'll have a level 3 nursing section in it. So, because I know from seeing my parents through death that you need to have that level 3 to take care of one of them while they've just come in and out of the hospital, and the other one be able to visit them easily. So if you have them in one facility and that other would be me in the facility, to be able to be in a facility yet still be able to be interfacing with the rest of the world, all ages, seeing vibrancy going on, being able to shop, being able to get together with people or sit on a bench and watch people. And that's what I'm hoping you're going to develop up here, because like I said before, we have too many bedrooms in Albemarle County. We need to have more communities and accessible to all of us.
That was a great comment and exactly what we're wanting to hear from you. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. I'm going to move in a few minutes to Kevin, because transportation and connectivity is always huge when you talk about Route 29 and Rio Road. But before we do that, I did want to just let anybody have an opportunity to talk about what would encourage you. I've heard accessibility and some of those other kinds of things, which I think is an important theme for what would encourage folks to patronize the area. But any other thoughts that you have before we go to transportation about what would encourage you to patronize the area, or what amenities you think would encourage businesses to locate in this area from your perspective?
One thing that you might want to consider, I see the 29 North Round area to be divided into either one of two main types of businesses. Either major attractions like an auto dealership, because I know Mallory Ford is moving up there, or what I would prefer to see is 29 actually be hidden from a lot of the property along there, particularly around Albemarle Square, Fashion Square, because then I think you might get more of the type of development that you're looking for, a Stonehenge type of area. But Stonehenge to me is not particularly desirable. It's limited with the parking that's not too accessible. I mean, I go to Costco a lot, but not in the movie theater, but not much else of Trader Joe's. But if I think with that visibility, the 29, 12 lanes of traffic, with all the traffic that's going to start coming down there, you've got to hide it. You've got to hide that area and make it more visibly and soundproof it somehow.
Okay.
Make it more accessible.
Thank you. Other thoughts? Yes, sir.
I sort of feel a little bit the same way, as if you can drive the traffic to the parallel streets, the Beckmars and I don't know what's on the other side.
Hillsdale.
It would be, you know, this would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I think then it opens things up for that being more of a transportation corridor, which is what a lot of us use it for now. The other thing that would be helpful to me in envisioning this is, are there successful models of communities that have done this, so we can think of, that's what we're talking about, and you see how it works and how it's a success.
I think that's a great point. There are some community, you know, of course everybody has their own characteristics to deal with, but I think getting visions in front of people, because it's really hard to figure out what you want and what you can see when you don't have a frame of reference for what might be possible. So I think that's a really good point, and I know that Rachel has done some work in some of the sessions to try to put possibilities out there, but I think what we're hearing you say is keep those visuals out there that can inspire people towards thinking in that way. Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
One of the things that makes the downtown mall walkable are the large shade trees, and I would hope that they would, you know, you would think in that terms, making a shading area for walking, and they would also dampen the noise, the trees would.
Great point, especially the last couple of days. Shade has been very valuable, hasn't it? Yes, ma'am. Vito, did you have the mic?
I think Stonefield is very successful. And just think about it, 5 years ago, there was nothing there. And they have a combination of housing, retail, Costco, have a hotel, and it's good. Hey, pardon?
We need to put some trees. We got that.
Yeah. Trees take time. Plant trees. But I think it's... Well, sure enough, they have to sell. Anyway, I happen to think it's a very successful community. And in terms of Rye on 29, I think you need housing, lots of housing, and that'll bring in all sorts of other activities. And the one question that I would have is that intersection is so brutal. Do we expect people to cross that intersection to tie into the other quadrants?
You know, I think that's a great question. I'm going to let Kevin talk about that and get him up here in just a minute. But I think there's a lot of different thinking about how much the quadrants themselves have opportunities so that you don't have to cross all the time. And then how do we build connectivity where we can so that when you do need to cross Rye or 29? But there is certainly some thinking about the quadrants themselves and how they could develop into something that would be walkable and connected. So let me maybe take one more, and then we'll get, everybody always wants the transportation person up. So let's get one more, and from somebody who hasn't had a chance, maybe, woman in the red, let me just real quick.
I'm sorry, I feel bad because I'm probably taking, I don't know if this concerns people, but I think of the places that I frequent, and I would, if you want people to be able to work, eat, live all in this area, I really think quality childcare or activities for small children. Because that's why I go downtown.
That and a brewery and a coffee shop are the most frequent things we hear from people.
Okay, so I'm glad that someone's brought it up. And the other thing is I lived down the street in Dunloren. Before that, I lived in the townhouses along Rio. And I know there's a bike path, but I refuse to let my husband bike on that little lane because I just don't feel like it's safe. So if you really want it to be a bikeable path from this node to the downtown, I feel like you would have to do more work on that.
I wanted to remind the audience of the challenge that we're facing is really, really unique. The size of that Rio intersection, it is the second largest intersection. And making a great separated intersection makes it a little bit easier to manage, but the scale of it is still the second largest non-interstate intersection. The fact that it's 11 lanes wide and 8 through lanes wide is the third, is only 3 roads like that in the state of Virginia that exist. Hall Street, Virginia Beach Boulevard, and R-29 corridor. So when you're thinking about this area, you got to think in that context. There's very few examples out there to where people focused in on the intersection as much as they focus, as Lee said, the quadrants that are around that intersection. So we've got some challenges just from the scale of the transportation infrastructure that exists at this node that we're considering. So I just want to kind of give you a little bit of a little context there.
Take the lady's question in the back, Lee.
Audrey, did you have something real quick? And then I'm afraid I'm going to have to skip out, so I'm going to take one question and then leave it to my valued colleagues.
I just paid my personal income tax, and the bill went to Merrifield, Virginia. I pay doctor bills. The bill is sent to be processed, or my payment is processed out of state. Could we encourage accounting firms and banks to compete and get those kind of businesses here, and this would be a perfect location at the Rio 29 to have those businesses.
We'll make a note of that. That's a good point. When Brad mentioned and Diantha mentioned Target Industries, financial institutions are a target industry of ours. We're well suited for that. That's the kind of business we like here. It's low impact, etc. So I think we'll make note of that and follow up on it. Thank you. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Kevin McDermott.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear all these questions about transportation. It reassures me that I have some job security here. Already moved forward. So one of the major focuses of this project is around transportation, how we connect this area to the rest of the county and the city of Charlottesville, and how we provide connections within it. To be successful, a place needs that connected transportation network. It allows, and I don't just mean vehicular transportation, I'm talking about transit, bicycle, and pedestrian connectivity. So this is one of our major focuses. And we look at all those areas because, you know, people want that freedom of choice is to make their decision as to what way they want to get around, if they want to use transit or if they want to bike or walk. We want to give them that ability. The way that the transportation network can organize an area is really important. That's, you know, the blocks are set up around the street and pedestrian network. So these are the reasons that we're looking at transportation and why it's such a major focus of this area. The state just put many millions of dollars into this grade separated interchange. And as the gentleman mentioned, we don't want to bring new traffic in if we don't think that we can develop a system that can handle that traffic. We don't want to ruin or waste all this money that we just put into the grade separated interchange. What we are like, what we come to you all for is to try and figure out some of the things that are important to our community as far as how we connect this corridor. What have you seen out there that you would like us to make sure we're connecting to? And how would you like us to try and make those connections? I've got a few questions here that I'd like to go over, and I can also just, you know, if you just have general comments about what you've seen in the area and what you think is important as we're evaluating the overall transportation network, I would love to hear that. My first question up there is in regards to bicycle and pedestrian networks. How do you think that those connections should be made? Where are the important connections that we need to make? Is there anyone that wants to go ahead and start commenting on these things or questions? Got one.
I'm a pedestrian and a bicyclist across that road, and I used to just go, you know, it was pretty rough. But what you've done at the
across
intersection...
Across 29?
Yeah, 29, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. What you've done at the intersection makes it so much easier now, because there, when you cross 29, you're actually just crossing those two non-through lanes, and then you can sit around out in that island for a while and take your time, and then you're crossing two more lanes. Well, anyway, it's so much easier to have it sort of split up, bifurcated, so that you can take it in chunks instead of just going across 12 lanes all at once. That's what I used to do. So it's working for me, that particular intersection. Yeah, Rio's a little bit harder, but you really have to wait. It's a problem kind of because everybody's turning right, and
yeah,
you don't know if they're going to hit you, but it's much better.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. You were brave if you ever did cross 29 before that was there. But yeah, I mean, I think this was a great first step, the grade separated interchange. But we think that, you know, with 29, and if we want this area to develop, we expect that we're going to need more than just one crossing of 29. We'd like to try and move people throughout the whole region or that whole area. So we need probably some additional connections.
Just one more comment about pedestrian crossing. I know someone who lives in Arden Place, and to get to CVS, she has to cross three roads rather than just one. Add the fourth pedestrian crossing on the north
side of that grade separated interchange?
Is that possible?
The way that interchange was developed, it wasn't developed to have that in at this time. Now we can look and see how we might be able to make changes in the future. That just wasn't a piece of it. It would kind of it would require a change of the signal timing, and I don't even think there's a pedestrian path that can be accessible to people on that north side. But one thing that we do look at, and we've heard pretty regularly, is that maybe what we should be looking at is a separated pedestrian or bicycle bridge that's apart from Rio, that's north of there, to provide an additional connection.
Just give some background. One reason why that may not happen is the largest turning movement at Rio and 29 is actually from Rio heading west to North 29, and if you drive that frequently enough, you'll notice that there is a green arrow and a lane dedicated for the continuous right turn. The option was weighed during the discussion of the design, but in order to accommodate that massive number of vehicles continuously turning right, we had to forego the pedestrian. It would just create too much of a dysfunction of pedestrian and vehicle activity. So that's a little bit of background. Doesn't say it can't be done in the future, it's just that's what the decision was made.
First, just a comment on cycling. From the parkway along Rio Road is the single most difficult cycling I do anywhere in the country.
You're talking about Rio Road East?
Either way. It's difficult for a couple reasons. One, it's never clean. There's glass out there right now in front of the Episcopal Church, and there's glass on the parkway also. Plus, I know cycling is 3 feet, but on Rio Road, the speeds that people are going means you need more than 3 feet. So if you want to make it more cycling friendly, it needs to be 4 feet. And then a pathway over to the car dealers, you know, to get to like ACAC or whatever, or walk to that, you know, and a biking thing, that would be very helpful.
Okay. So the car dealers, I'm sorry, where is that again? Just so I understand what you're talking about.
Oh, all the car dealers that are
on Rio?
Yeah,
on the north side. Okay.
On 29.
On 29,
yeah, there's a whole mm-hmm. boatload of them. So you take your car over there to get serviced, and then to get anywhere, mm-hmm. just think about what you have to go through now if you're going to drop your car off there and you want to go to ACAC. Look at what you have to go through now as opposed to if you could just walk over it.
Yeah, that's a good argument for having some facility north of where the Rio interchange is to provide a connection there, absolutely. And the John Warner Parkway and trying to get some additional maintenance funds to keep the bike lanes clear on that, I understand that's an issue. Whenever we're putting in bike lanes, we try and go for a five foot width for that bike lane. And for that segment between John Warner Parkway into the heart of this small area plan, I think that it would be nice to see an even better facility than that, maybe something that could be separated from the vehicular traffic. Mm-hmm. Virginia?
I want to welcome anybody who would like to attend a community, what are we? Citizens Advisory Committee for the Rio area. We meet the fourth Thursday of every month. Unfortunately, not this month, the next month. And we will be at, the address is located on albemarle.org. You can find all sorts of things on albemarle.org. But of all the meetings I've gone to, and I've been to a lot of them about this project, it has been a surprise to me how many senior citizens are interested in biking paths and how much that issue comes up. So I think it's great to hear from all of you on that, but I want you to know that you're in a long list, and it's been loudly declared and definitely heard by everybody on this
in the staff. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point, Virginia. Bikeability and pedestrian access has been probably the point we've heard reiterated more than anything else regarding the small area plan, and not just that, but throughout the county. And I think that we're going to see a real focus on that issue over the next few years to try and get some additional facilities in. So thank you.
First of all, I'd like to agree with the gentleman over here. I live at Glenwood Station, right behind Fashion Square, and trying to find a place to walk. I would go out onto Rio Road East and turn right, and I don't care how wide you make that bike lane, unless there's some enforcement, it's frightening. There are two lanes of traffic going one direction, a bike lane, and I stopped walking because I was afraid to walk on the sidewalk because the traffic is just speeding by there. There's also no place to walk around Fashion Square. On the outside, it'd be nice to just have a walking path there. But the main thing is, I was really pleased to hear about these walkability areas. I think it's really interesting because it seems like with the whole grade-separated intersection, the focus has been on through traffic for 29 North and South. And it's very difficult for people who live here to get across in their car from one side of 29 to the other, the very long wait times to make those turns. And I saw a man the other day skateboarding across the intersection, and it wasn't a college student either. So my main question, and I really would go to you, I guess, is how would people walk across, get from one side of 29 to the other? Because you're going to have a separated area. You're going to have people on one side of 29 and one side on the and people on the other. I'm originally from Syracuse, New York, and 40 how many years ago when they built the overpass for Route 81 going through the city, it was wonderful. But Syracuse University, just like our UVA, is a big part of the city. That was on one side of 81. The city was on the other. And for the last decade, people have been arguing that, you know, we're segregating the university. How can we do? Should we take down the overpass and have the trucks go on the city streets, which is unimaginable. So it kind of seems like we're in the same situation here. I don't know if we put the cart before the horse. We have this gigantic intersection. And I just am really going to be really interested to see how we can walk from one side of it to the other. I'm just not picturing it. I'm glad to hear you have luck doing it. I wouldn't even think of walking across it. Yeah. So that's my main concern.
And it's a concern we've heard from a lot of folks, and we've looked at a lot of other cities, both large and small cities, to see how other people are bridging divides like a Route 29. Even just down in Lynchburg, we've seen some examples of both tunnels and bridges that are examples of things that we could probably incorporate here. We look at some bigger cities as well, in Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Denver. They're bridging highways all around there that with either they can cap a roadway like that if they want some public space that actually bridges the area, or just simple pedestrian bridges. As we were driving out here, we went past Rugby Road, where they're putting the new bridge over the 250 bypass there. I don't know if anybody's seen that, but it's just a small pedestrian bridge, but it's going to go over, and that's a four-lane roadway there. It's going to look really nice. So. Yeah, exactly. That's what we just drove by. Yeah.
Yes, I think the Places 29 is well named because it is multiple places. It's not just one place. And 29 itself is not a place. It is adjacent to places. 29 is a roadway and a barrier. So if you think, I think as you're doing, you're looking at the different, the intersection with Hydraulic and the intersection with Rio. Those are sort of four places up there, and if you can make a good enough connection, a convenient enough connection, and safe enough connection among those four, you can turn them into one place, although one united place or something. But
And that is, you can see my second question was regarding the four quadrants is what we see, because 29 isn't the only barrier. Rio really is a barrier also. So I appreciate the comment. I think that's a good one.
And the other thing is, I wonder if you thought about trying to put an emphasis on one or two of the quadrants initially, rather than trying to do all four piecemeal, so they take longer before they get that critical mass.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a concern. You know, it's all going to come down to how development occurs. You know, all that land is in right now owned by private entities, and so we got to work with them to figure out which one is going to be the first focus. But I can't imagine that it's all going to happen at once. You're right. This is a long-term plan over the next 50 years that we're looking at. So thank you for that comment.
What I was wondering, I received an email from Albemarle County about I believe it's a pedestrian bridge up near Pantops. Is that correct?
Yes.
I just wondered, is it a pedestrian, it is a true bridge?
I'm sorry, there's no pedestrian bridge going up over Pantops.
What are they doing up there?
We are, you might have seen a recent story that there is a at-grade pedestrian crossing that's going in across 250 towards the eastern end of Pantops there at State Farm Boulevard by the Chick-fil-A. We've heard people's concerns that's not really going to address the real need at Pantops, that there is a desire to see a pedestrian bridge, likely somewhere closer to the big shopping center there, but no plans right now. There will have to be a pedestrian phase with those traffic signals, but it is pedestrian activated, so it's not going to be it's not going to be one that is turning on when there's no pedestrians present. And additionally, this is being put at the far eastern end where there aren't as many turning movements that we have to be concerned about. So I don't think it's going to. We had to work with VDOT very heavily on that piece to make sure that it wasn't going to impact traffic too much. That was one of the things that held it up for a long time, but we finally figured out a way that we think we can get it. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. I hope they use it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just want to get into the weeds real quickly about the bike thing again. And
yes.
Rio Road East, I ride that too, but I never go in the bike lane. It's way too scary. And so I ride on the sidewalk. I guess that's illegal, I don't know, but that's what I do. And I think if you really want to have bikeability that works, it has to be separated from the roadway, and not just the sidewalk, but really seriously separated, so you are a separate system from the cars if you don't want people to be intimidated by it. I think that has to happen or people won't use it.
Absolutely. Yeah, as Virginia's saying, that we the Berkmar extension is doing a separated bicycle and pedestrian path, a multi-use path on the east side of that road. I expect that's the type of facility that we're going to try and mimic in other places. And it's also, John Warner Parkway has bike lanes within the road, but it also has a separate shared use path that runs adjacent to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have those two facilities on both sides of this small area plan study area that we're looking at. I agree that it would make sense to provide a similar facility that got people through the area as well. So I was wondering if anyone also had any comments about transit. I'm going to close up here, but I just was curious if there were people that wanted to make comments about connecting the corridor with transit.
Well, I'm a little concerned about the transit because, I mean, I travel that intersection daily, and I find that certain times of the day, the traffic is really intense, weaving traffic as you come off the ramp from Rio Road, headed north or south, emerge into the lanes. And it's getting dangerous to try to make a left turn into the shopping center at Lowe's and Kroger if you're headed north, or if you're headed south to turn at Fashion Square. a certain time, and I imagine with increased traffic, especially with all the developments north of the city, that's going to be a lot harder, and I'm worried about maintaining the access we have now, and I don't know if that's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. I'm worried about the left turn intersections being closed into Lowe's and possibly in the southern entrance into Elmo Square.
Yeah, we do look at those, and VDOT does have a policy. I mean, we've already done an access management study for this entire corridor and determined where we want to retain traffic signals that would have left turns, and there are some that we're expecting are going to get removed over the long period of time that we're looking at this study for. But I think we're gonna ensure that that you do retain access to all those businesses, and there's a lot of methods that we're using that can still allow left turns, or maybe not direct left turns, but to build out a network that would allow you to get to where you need to go. I'll take one more question, and then I think Rachel's going to step up and close up.
Hi. This is a slightly different subject, but the whole thing about building the grade separated interchange was to expedite traffic through the city, the built-up part of the county. Are those lights synchronized? They don't seem to me to be. I thought that was the purpose of it all.
The purpose is to synchronize those signals throughout the corridor, but until all the construction is complete, including what we're doing at the widening on 29 north of the Rivanna River, they're not going to be able to get those to work in concert yet. So because of the change in speeds that we have and the different patterns of traffic related to the construction, they're going to wait until that finishes up, which is at the end of this month, and then they're going to start working on the timing of the signals throughout the entire 29 corridor from the city all the way down at Emmett and then going all the way up to Hollymead area.
Is the idea that you'll be able to go the speed limit and proceed straight through without a stoplight?
Generally, that is the idea, although what they do, the system now basically creates platoons, so it'll build a platoon and it'll allow that platoon to flow through all the traffic lights. You will get stopped occasionally, even if you're going all through the corridor, but it's based on time of day and other factors. So I think I've probably gone over my time, and Rachel's going to step up here and say a few more things before we close out. And if you have any other comments or questions, my contact information's on the website. I'd be happy to talk to you more. Thank you.
So we're almost out of time for our discussion on the Rio 29 area. I know we want to save some time for just general Q&A with Brad and Diantha, but with the few minutes we have left, I wanted to talk a little bit about uses, amenities, and mission for this area. So I'd love people to think about what you would want to see in this area for you to be able to live, work, play, or shop here. And I particularly want to focus on housing in the few minutes we have left, particularly this age group. I would love to hear what type of housing you'd like to see in the area. What would you want to live in if you were to move in this area? What type of housing would it be? Apartments, condominiums, townhomes? I'd love to hear any thoughts you'd have on that. Accessibility?
Yes.
Access would be critical. Not that we're old, but the mobility is becoming an issue, and I think having housing that would have elevator access, underground parking, so that you didn't have to cart groceries up and down a couple flights of stairs. Those are the things that I looked for when I moved here, and sure. I found it. Okay. But there aren't a lot of places, and if you can find some place that has those things, it's usually quite expensive.
That's a great point. Yeah, there's not a lot of places in Albemarle County that I know of that have elevators and accessibility like that. So that's a great point. Thank you.
How about the live-work communities where you can have your insurance company and live above it?
Sure.
Live-work.
Sure, sort of like the mixed use with the retail on the bottom and then some apartment.
Well, it can be smaller for smaller businesses. You'd have a small law firm and you can live above it.
Sure.
Those kinds of things.
Sure. That's a great point. Mm-hmm.
Besides for senior living, I'd like to see Albemarle County have more condos available for our younger community, our children's age, who are staying in the area, thank goodness for us, but to be able to live and work in the same community. When children live in the area, they can't afford the housing here. We need to have more affordable housing and not just give to developers the ability, oh, well, you can pay a fee if you don't build in affordable housing and get by with that. We need to make sure that they all do put in affordable housing so we can keep our younger people here and starting out. And also I'd like to see places for our small businesses. It's good to bring in the large clean industry of finance, etc., but I had an antique business and I had to go out of business because downtown expects 3-year leases. You can't get out of that lease. You have to pay for that lease unless you find somebody to take over for you. And it's just not feasible for entrepreneurs to start little businesses and exist here. And I like the idea too of living above your shop, so then you don't have to go far. You don't need to have a car to get to run, get lunch or something like that. You can just go upstairs. So to have things for small businesses to be able to start and not have huge rents and not have 3-year lease rents so that you can't fold if you have to fold.
Sure, those are good points. Affordable housing is definitely something that the county is trying to explore right now. It's a challenging issue, but this area seems to have some great opportunities for affordable housing and workforce housing to be located there. So it's definitely something we're exploring.
It's important to me to be able to rent a place where when I step out my front door, there's a yard, not a parking lot. When I step out my back door, there's a patio, not another parking lot. And I looked at a lot of places to rent when I moved here, and very lovely places, but not many that had greenery around them. I think that's important for a lot of us who live here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, this area certainly could use some more greenery. I think we maybe have time for one or two more, and then we're going to turn it over to Brad and Diantha.
Two totally unrelated comments. One is the shortage of master bedroom properties on the first floor. When we moved here 4 years ago, it was just amazing how many were missing. There weren't any available. We really had to search to find a choice on ground floor master bedroom facilities. And I think that would apply to also multi-story buildings where you could go up an elevator and you could still be, as it were, on the first floor when you get off the elevator. I found a shortage of that, particularly in Charlottesville. Second thing, totally unrelated, thinking to the future, our son who lives in Denver just bought an all-electric car, and he's challenged to find recharge stations for electric cars, and I don't own an electric car, but I have no idea where in this area I would get my car recharged except with an extension cord running from my front porch. In Denver, at least they have maps available that you can get on the internet to tell you where you can go. But that would, around Albemarle Square or Fashion Square, maybe there are places there, but I haven't looked for them, but there's a need for that, I believe.
Sure. Thank you. And then I think we'll take one more and then wrap up.
In previous discussions about the small area planning, it was stated that existing neighborhoods would not be changed until they're ready for redevelopment. What criteria exists to determine when a neighborhood would be redeveloped?
I think that would really be up to the private property owners. So if we had someone, a developer, who wanted to buy up a bunch of private properties and think about redeveloping, then they would, they, that would be their right to do so, but we might have to look at the, what the regulations are for those single-family homes before a developer was able to do that. So I don't see that happening for these neighborhoods anytime soon. We're not planning for it. We haven't heard a desire from any of the developers in the area that they would like to do that. So I don't anticipate that happening. And with that, I think we're going to wrap up and turn it over to Brad and Diantha. I want to thank everyone for a lot of great comments. We heard some new things today, so I appreciate your time and your thoughts on this. And please stay involved. We have a website. It's on the Albemarle County website, /RIO29SAP, if you want to learn more about the project. Thank you.
I think with that, we can open it up for just questions on any topic. I would like to say, though, that pedestrian access, bicycling, and green space and trees, that's the third thing we are hearing the most about in these conversations, is that we need to see trees, and we would like to have pocket parks, open spaces, places to gather.
This is perhaps a little philosophical in its approach. It's not specifically geared to the presentation, but there's a trend in this country for shopping centers almost collapsing. You see Macy's closing 1,000 stores, Sears Roebuck is on the brink of extinction, and it goes on and on and on. If you want to see real life episode, look at Town Center in Chesterfield County, where the developer moves on down the road, gets cheaper land, develops it. The retailers begin to abandon the old shopping center, and you end up with a virtual slum, is what it is. And I hope that comes into your thinking as you think about the future, if you're talking about a 50-year plan, as to how you're going to mitigate that or what you're going to do to get around it and deal with it.
You know, part of our expectations of the RIO 29 small area plan is to have staff propose the teeth to that plan. What incentives do landowners need to take their property further, to evolve it, to match whatever market expectations have changed? We need to know that so that that doesn't happen, so that a landowner whose purpose has now become obsolete doesn't have any other option because on the government side, we haven't provided them the either incentives or the flexibility in regulation or just streamlining a permitting process so that if they have a opportunity with a partner, they don't have to wait 2 years for that opportunity to even be finalized. So those are things that we can do to help make sure those things don't happen. And so we're looking to staff to help the board understand what kind of teeth to put to these kind of plans, because they'll look really nice and they'll have a great vision, but if we can't figure out how to partner with the landowners to incentivize them, then they just become another plan that isn't getting any traction. So
there's a question yes. Here. Oh, I'm sorry.
Is Charlottesville Albemarle working towards the future on the mass transit system that would be considering electric cars or something that is a future, not a gasoline-operated system, that will also be, as I was saying before, connecting the arteries and the veins of, so that people can get to all the areas, all the services, all the, whether it be city, county, et cetera, shopping and living?
The Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, Chip Boyles is here this afternoon, but they took the lead to try to get the city and county to get on the same page or at least get into the same room to have those mass transit conversations. And I think we're going to see that come to fruition pretty soon here in July or August, to where we formalize that arrangement. So that'll provide a better forum for those conversations, so they're not being had in separation of each other. The ideas can be fleshed out between both bodies at the same time. As far as electric vehicles or electric buses, I assume is kind of also where you're going, I could speak to that in that the transit industry is moving fairly quickly towards that. Reno, Nevada, of all places, is testing a full-on self-driving vehicle. It's on an electric bus called Proterra. Versus Portello's, who's that Chicago hot dog place anyway from Chicago. And it's getting a lot of traction. And so we have almost an opportunity here in Albemarle and Charlottesville to test this out as well. We've got a software developer in Crozet who's already testing software for self-driving cars. It's not a leap to partner with them to start tweaking that software for buses as well. So I think we've got some golden opportunities. We've got Main Street that's going to be potentially redeveloped. It's a perfect opportunity to implement some of these things in a more controlled environment.
Would you not also be making a designated lane for this to operate in?
Good. You're exactly right. And VDOT is working right now on how they're going to deal with autonomous cars. We've had several presentations from VDOT along those lines. Now, have they figured it out exactly? Of course not. But we're also talking to the city about how this might affect our work around economic development and being one community. So those conversations are going on. You're exactly right. And autonomous cars will certainly change the needs and how our transportation network plays out. So, and the other thing that I did want to mention to your question, you're going to start hearing, as Brad said, July and August, certainly by, I would hope, August, discussions between the city and the county around a transit partnership. That will really move us forward. I am very hopeful, because we certainly need better transit for Albemarle County residents. Especially in the urban ring, we probably need a transit hub out 29 North somewhere. So that's part of this discussion as well. But that partnership where the city and the county come together around transit, with John at the table as well, is going to be really critical. Well, but we are really needing to have those discussions. There's no doubt about that. You're exactly right. We in the county, we need better bus shelters. So there are lots of issues that have to be discussed.
Yes, hi. Somebody mentioned earlier about the ice park. I understand it's going to last another year downtown now, but is there a it's an awfully nice facility. It's too bad it's going, but is there thought for the future about relocating? I've heard some discussion. I was thinking Seminole Square, Albemarle Square might both be possibilities for that.
I have not heard anything along those lines. The only thing I know is there's discussion at Stonefield about an ice rink this fall, but that's not the kind of facility that you're talking about. I will say when we were talking about Stonefield, it was originally planned, you know, to have a second story and apartments above, and it's really a shame that that didn't happen. I think the recession and a change in ownership caused that to go away. But it really would have been wonderful for Stonefield to have had that neighborhood, more of a neighborhood feel with homes on a second level. But it really is a very popular, I agree with Vito on Stonefield. I think you go out there now and it's very vibrant. And I would encourage you to remember that there is also a city market at Stonefield now on Thursday evenings and Saturday mornings. Little plug.
I have two questions on the planning process. The first question is, what steps has Albemarle County taken to streamline or speed up the development process and approval process? And second question is, do you see the use of eminent domain for any of the small plan development here?
I would say no to the second question. Just it's not a tool that the General Assembly encourages localities to exercise. On the first part, You know, we are really hopeful that the recent economic plan would have helped with addressing that. Unfortunately, it fell short of that. But we hope that an economic development director, when we finally recruit one, will help us understand how to streamline some of the processes a little better. Now, you have to remember, this community loves their processes. I mean, it's sometimes a challenge of making it ready and easy, but also doing our due diligence to make sure we're protecting the residents that already live here and the businesses and the quality of life. So that's a fine balance. In some communities, there isn't an interest in the protection as much as the propagation of things. So keep in mind, we wrestle with that almost daily as supervisors, but even in simple conversations about transportation or anything else, housing, schools, there's always a balance that we're trying to strike.
And I will say to your question, Rich, we have spent the last year really getting our economic development authority in place, because up until now, our authority really just dealt with bonds. They are positioned now to really take some of this work and run with it. We can be a catalyst. But it took a while to get us there because it was very new for this community, as Brad references. Eminent domain, I have never heard that discussed.
Economic development, you're looking to attract more business and industry to help your tax base, so to speak. And I'm struck by the fact of how Washington keeps creeping further down 95 to where it's almost to Richmond and how it's to Fauquier County. So maybe some outreach to defense industries who are in urban traffic, you know, might be something as far as economic development to look at.
Yeah, and you're right. That's one of our target industries on our list. And certainly we work with the ones we have here already very closely with DIA and NINJIC. Do you have anything you want to add? But you're exactly right. That would be a very good business type of business for us here.
I'll add that one of the keys to figuring all this out and attracting businesses and even retaining ones and fostering them to grow is to kind of change the community discussions and narratives that are out there. One of the reasons why Diantha came up with the idea of having an economic development public conversation and asked me to join was to have those public economic development conversations, those positive ones, so that when businesses, before they even contact the county offices, they are Googling Albemarle. They're Googling economic development Albemarle. They're Googling, you know, brewery Albemarle. They are checking to see what social media is saying. They're checking to see what everybody else is talking about, as well as what we're talking about. So the key right now, I mean, we've got a long road to change our strategy, but the key right now is the conversations that are being had. They can't be negative. If they remain negative, we will lose before we even know that we had a chance. So if there's anything to get out to the community, it's that. Change the conversation. It cannot be negative.
Yeah, and we need the businesses and the chamber at the table to help us with that. We really do, because Brad's exactly right. The first thing anybody does right now if they want to know something is they start Googling.
Last night at the transportation meeting, Brad, you mentioned how important the 29 route is to as a north-south corridor. In national and state conversations, what do you hear about the possibility of another interstate?
Another interstate? None. I would be surprised if the federal government funds another interstate of any significance other than some sort of beltway around a major metropolitan area like Chicago or something like that. It's just not in their funding priorities. Federal government as well as states are shifting to more, and they actually shifted about 10 years ago, to more transportation management, not transportation development. How can we manage the resources and the infrastructure we have now better? And that's why you hear about smart signal technology and things like that. It's how can we squeeze more efficiency out of what we're already operating? That's going to be where a lot more conversation. Now, I mean, even with the recent administration changing at the federal level, there's going to be a way more conversation about just shoring up the state of good repair of our infrastructure. There's conversations at the state level about that as well. That's where it's going to be a huge draw of all the funding. So even before we even consider building a new road somewhere, we're going to say, is there anything deficient that needs to be shored up?
It was interesting. Not too long ago, the Secretary of Transportation came down and spoke at one of the meetings. I can't remember now which one. And the question of a bypass came up, and the question was, when are we going to really get a bypass? And he said, it's not happening. Greenfield interstate road construction, it is not happening, and it's not going to happen again. Number one, you can't get the right-of-way. It's too expensive, and Brad's exactly right. They're looking at making what we have now better and with new technology improvements.
I would like to thank both of you and the staff for coming here before I ask my one suggestion. I know the two of you have a Board of Supervisors meeting to get to at 4 o'clock, and it was very nice of you to squeeze us in. I would like to suggest that whenever you show those pictures of what's happened somewhere else, that you show what it looked like before, because showing me what it looks like afterward doesn't do it. So therefore, the pictures that we have of what we're starting with is a very good place to start with and to help other people in the future.
That's a great idea. Thank you. Maybe one last question. Is there anyone that has a burning question that they'd like to ask before we go? It was just lovely being here with you. Thank you so much.